Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. Welcome to the PI World 2020 Roundup of the Year. We're running a series of these interviews with previous guests from the year. And today we're with Stephen English, who we interviewed back in April 2020. Stephen, it's been a big year for you in lots of ways. Tell us where you're now working and what you're up to.
Good morning, Tamsin. Thanks for looking me up again. God, April, how time flies. So I'm now at Stella Asset Management. Joined the firm the 1st of September, and really now it's sole dedication to what I truly love, which is the AIM side of things. We specialise in inheritance tax relief, so it's for that purpose. But yeah, really, really enjoying it. Total focus, much better resources, bigger infrastructure, bigger research budget. So yeah, like a kid in a candy shop at the moment.
Brilliant. So it's probably best, in terms of your performance to year to date, it's probably best to look at the Stella performance. I know you've only been there since September, but tell us what sort of performance Stella's achieved this year to date.
Yeah, it's likely not too dissimilar to our peers. And relative to the AIM benchmark, we're generally to a man and woman lagging. So AIM is up 10.5% year to date, and the Stella portfolio is down just over 8%. AIM, for much of the 2010 decade, was a terribly easy index to beat, but this year it's anything but. And that's generally, it has been increasing in quality for some time, which is a good thing. But this year it's had an almighty rocket from tech, healthcare have been the key drivers. It actually, sector composition wise, looks more similar to the S&P 500. You can compare the FTSE 100 and FTSE 250. AIM has knocked it out of the park in the UK.
And in terms of what you've been holding, either in your past job or now, what holding has gone really well for you and sort of followed the strategy for the reason that you got into it?
I'd say the really pleasing one for all sorts of reasons would be Bolex. Originally bought this back in February last year, sub a pound. At that point, it was up 270% from its very, very low point. And it's the great thing about recovery stocks, actually, just as an aside for viewers, really don't buy a recovery stock if it's not rallied pretty significantly. And moreover, never, ever, ever buy a recovery stock if it's trading below its 200-day moving average. A lot of these turnarounds never turn around, so you've got to try and avoid these value traps. And a really good tool to do that is the 200-day moving average. So there was already some recovery coming through. Sub a quid, liked what Nat Rothschild, the chairman, was doing and his vision. And actually, we had previous with Volex. Thankfully, didn't have that much money in it. But it's a bit like a sports team. Sometimes you have to lose a final first to be able to win a final the next time. So we took our licks on the previous incarnation of Volex. Had the CFO at the time come in, articulate some very long-term cycles. I was a believer in mean reversion generally. I think as you go on and you learn more, I think capacity within manufacturing sectors really never really exits. Whoever owned the building just hands the keys to someone else and it's free of all the liabilities and they keep producing. So I was expecting more mean reversion. The CFO got his napkin out and started to jot down some back of the envelope calculations. Not saying that swayed me at all, but he was reasonably persuasive. But unfortunately, mean reversion never happened and the balance sheet became a bit of a mess and it was too concentrated with its top three customers were over 50%. And unfortunately, the top one was Apple, who are pretty ferocious when it comes to clients. So we exited, but then I kept it on the back burner. And because of that experience, there were certain things that I knew what to look for. And one of them was just, and I said it to the broker at the time, Volex of old would have profit warned, given the conditions that were going on in China by now. And that just told me that something was afoot in terms of the story. They have greatly reduced their customer concentration. They were moving up the value chain. There was inorganic growth opportunities. There was cost efficiencies. There was margin improvement. We had a clear roadmap to double-digit operating margins. And Nat Rothschild backed it with a lot of his own money. He now owns 25%, which is always really, really good to see. And the end markets were very conducive. Again, if you're looking at a turnaround, avoid a turnaround if it's end markets that are horrendous and are causing a headwind. What you want to see are tailwinds and better execution. So it was previously badly managed, but it had a great global footprint. We really like the integrated manufacturing side, which was the high margin, sexy part of it, which is tapped into some great growth markets. But more recently, actually, Power Cords looks like it's going to be a much higher quality business than we thought, and they've recently augmented that with an acquisition. So we touched on end markets. They built an electrical vehicle charging, cable charging business from nothing a couple of years ago to a $30 million business this year. The sole supplier to a very well-known US electric car manufacturer, which to be sole supplier, it won't carry on forever, but for the time being, that's very, very high margin business. And they're also plugged into the data center trades as well. We do like mega trends. Electric cars definitely is one, and data consumption and growth definitely is one as well. But I couldn't tell you if Tesla's going to be a winner or any of the other cohort of manufacturers out there. It's a bit like when Warren Buffett said there was 2,000 automobile manufacturers in the US in the early days, and try and pick a winner. What you can do, though, is you can pick a winner who is a market leader in supplying all of them, or potentially all of them. So that's what we like. It's got many shots on goal. It's articulated its clear vision. For now, it's structural growth. At some point, those structural growth will turn maybe more cyclical growth, and it'll be time to hop off. But I don't think that's anytime soon, and I think it's really set fair for some pretty nice upside for the next couple of years at least.
And what do you make of the change of management?
The CFO you're alluding to here. God, yes. That was a surprise. It was a little bit of a stretch to call an immediate departure as part of some well-founded succession planning. That was a bit naughty. There was a wry smile there. There was no glowing praise for him in the RNS, nor did he get a paragraph either. So you got to suspect there's been a falling out of sorts, which did take the shine off the results. It definitely did. I think he was, if not the architect, he'd certainly had a big part to play in the recovery story. So it wasn't good to see. What I would say, though, is the new CFO, who looks about 20, gave a very, very good performance on the call. Very calm, very assured. And he's already been in Rolex for, I think it's 18 months. And if you believe what they're saying, and I certainly do, he's effectively been doing a lot of the CFO role for that period anyway, so it's not new to him. So that certainly de-risks it, because it's one of the worst announcements you see, immediate departure of a CFO. But yeah, sanguine enough, Tamsin.
And what didn't go so well this year, and what did you learn from that?
I'm glad we haven't had that much time, because we could spend 2 hours on this part of it. It was disappointing on a couple of levels, because I am still big believers of the founders who are running it. It was Shoe Zone. There was a really nice story developing on the big box format. This was taking them into brands that they were never previously targeting, likes of Skechers and Clark. So it was a new customer demographic. They also had a tremendous property acumen, and thankfully some years ago I got onto the fact that if you're a retailer, you need to have very short leases. So when their leases are rolling off, they were often getting rent reductions of 40-50%. So that was really good for the time being, and it was starting to come through. Sales had been falling at the headline level, but that was the high street side of it, which was masking the growth coming through on the big box story. And we were just starting to rock and roll there, and then of course COVID happened, and you know, everyone's got a plan until you get punched on the nose. And then I don't think I was ever quite prepared, nor is capitalism really, for a complete stop of everything. I never really modelled zero revenues going through a business. You could model a pretty shocking 10% fall in revenues, which is horrendous for a operationally geared retailer. But to have zero and try and put your business in stasis for a period of time, wasn't really prepared for that. So what happened with that one? Well, obviously, like all retailers, the share price fell pretty precipitously. And then it bounced and then started to roll off again. I thought that they should have raised some cash just to take off the table any sort of insolvency risk or perception of risk. The founders had a different view than I did for their own reasons. We disagreed, so I had to exit that one. But as retailers go, I do still hold them quite easily top decile in terms of how good practitioners they are, and I wish them every success.
What did you learn from that?
Maybe just expect the unexpected. It goes back to, we never thought there would be no revenues coming through that business for a period of time. And what I also learned is that a net cash balance sheet, which is what they had, and they always ran that business very prudently and conservatively, as family type ran businesses are wanting to do. But even a net cash balance sheet wasn't enough. Sometimes the headwinds are so engulfing, it can weaken what is perceived to be a hitherto strong balance sheet in the blink of an eye. It's all because the cash burn is so ferocious. It was the speed of the weakening of the balance sheet, I think, is what I've taken away from that.
Interesting. So looking forward to 2021, what is your top pick for 2021?
I've done a couple of these videos now, Tams. It always reminds me of the, if you look back at a photo of yourself, me from the 80s and what the hell was doing wearing that. You're absolutely embarrassed on your previous top picks. I was banging the drum on Shoe Zone a couple of years ago. But do your own research, all of those usual disclaimers, but one that is shaping up to be another turnaround, and I do like my turnarounds for whatever reason, it's DX Group. So this is the delivery service, B2B and B2C. They've got two main divisions, DX Express and DX Freight, probably best known amongst solicitor circles for their exchange business, which is document exchange, so high value documents, and they also do secure courier. But then on the freight side, you've got one man and two man and the logistics side. What I like about this, and always back experience, never back a turnaround if someone's doesn't have that experience within that sector or that domain expertise. So Lloyd Dunn, who arrived in October 17, along with the chairman, who was exec at the time, Ron Series, over 30 years experience Lloyd has in the running of these businesses. These guys were ex-Tufnells, and they turned around Tufnells Express business there. He also put his money where his mouth was. There was various debt for equities, but he put his hand in his pocket. None of these funny options or whatever. This was real cold, hard cash. And Lloyd now has over a 10% stake in the business. And they've done exceptionally well. We only bought it fairly recently at 17 pence. It's already 26 pence. Incidentally, it was up 180% from its low in March. But say, don't let that put you off. Above its 200-day moving average. And as chart patterns go, it was also a lovely, lovely chart pattern, going nowhere for a good number of years, building a really nice base. There's an old expression, the longer the base, the bigger the upside. People just get bored when it does nothing and within a very low vol environment. So I think it was overlooked. But Lloyd's come in. He's an Everton fan, so he's clearly used to dealing with adversity, and he had a lot of adversity to overcome at DX Group. The board got reconstituted commercially, strategically, operationally, financially. Everything now has been repaired. The run rate margins of the two businesses are where they need to be. particularly in freight. He inherited freight when it was losing 25 million EBITDA, and now he's turned that around already to be a profitable business. He didn't scrimp on CapEx. There's a 10 million CapEx program. He only had two software developers when he arrived. Now there's 25 software developers. So this is almost a little tech business incubating within a courier business. But why do you need tech? And why do you need to develop your own software? Well, it's innovations like estimated time of arrival, or do you need to change your date if you're getting a parcel delivered to you? So he's done a tremendous job, and it's the best meetings I have is when I learn something from a CEO. I always want to come away from that, and it was a masterclass in what makes for a good logistics delivery courier business. And Lloyd absolutely loves what he does. He lives and breathes it, and to his mind, to excel in this area, you have to be on it 24/7. If you start to slip even a little bit, your competitors will come after you. But what we liked about it, again, like Volex, we could see a clear margin progression story. We could see efficiencies. They're increasing the number of depots. That's great from economies of scale, from a cost-based point of view, in terms of route optimization. And it also means that there's less travel between the depot and the customer, and there's more delivery slots available as well. And once they build out the network, that'll allow them to change their whole fleet to electric, where range anxiety won't be as big an issue. And it was simple things. And again, if you're looking at turnarounds, the CEO should be banging on about simplify, simplify, simplify. And if they're not, get a little bit worried, because generally what needs turning around is an over bureaucratic business that's become overly complicated. So they were leaving money on the table by, believe it or not, not weighing their regular dimension weight items. They've sorted that out now, and that's good for about £10 million of extra revenue just by weighing and charging the customer correctly. They put in a lost property arm, and this is where parcels were coming into their depot without an address on it properly. That was just falling away through the cracks. Now they are sending it back to the rightful owner, who are made up, and that's saving them £1 million previously that they were getting fined. So it's very, very simple things that are. They're starting to automate a little bit within the depots. What they've already done has already paid for itself. In terms of the ROI on these things. And sometimes when you're targeting small and medium-sized businesses, it's the more cuddly or touchy-feely aspects that matter to them. And what I mean by that is DX excels and prides itself on customer service. So you might think that's a bit nonsensical. Surely these hard-nosed people are only about getting the very, very cheapest person to deliver that parcel or whatever it is. DX don't deliver the £1.70 type parcels. They want to be charging £3 to £4 for a parcel, and they've found the customers who are prepared to pay for that value proposition. To give you an anecdote, when Lloyd first arrived, there was nothing he could do. He lost a reasonably medium-sized contract, £4.5 million. It's a high street retailer. Went to one of the big boys. So you know the big boys, like say your Hermes, your DHLs, your Whistles, Yodels of this world. Very recently, that contract came back because they were sick to the back teeth of the lack of customer service they were getting. So even if it means paying a little bit more, it's the difference between price and value. And just finally, why we were really excited about this is that sometimes you need a bit of luck with investments. I definitely do, and I'd rather be a lucky general than a good general. But serendipitously, DX Group has capacity. It lost its passport delivery contract recently. It has capacity in a market where no one else does. So I'm not saying it can name its price, but it's certainly got a lot more bargaining power than anyone else have, who are often operating above capacity, and there's a lot of overtime going on with very stressed out drivers. If you look at the forecasts with the Liberum, the broker, they've penciled in a 6% operating margin by full year 23. I think management would be very, very, very disappointed if it's only 6% by full year 23. Whether they could get to 10%, I think it's a big ask. I think if they execute flawlessly and they start to infill and land some logistics contracts where a lot of people are looking to outsource now, Just as an aside, they think by outsourcing it lowers their carbon footprint. Well, as long as it's not their problem, it's someone else's, they can write in the annual report their carbon emissions, and that is a big, big driver. It may sound a little bit silly, but it isn't. So I think the freight's going to surprise, and I think we could come in more like 8 to 9% operating margins. And you apply that, you run it through, and what sort of earnings it could chuck out, and we're only on very low single-digit PE for some pretty strong growth potential. So, look, anything can happen. We're at 26 pence. If it all does go swimmingly, they could even see upside to £1 given a long enough period.
Wow. Thank you very much for that, Stephen. And tell our listeners where they can now find you.
The best place probably LinkedIn. So yeah, Stephen English, and also please visit our website. It's had a recent upgrade. It looks very, very nice, and there's a lot more information which is relevant now. And we're going to have some pretty informative newsletters, and I'll be doing a lot more regular company spotlights as well every month. So if you want to get inside my mind a bit more regularly, please sign up there to the Stellar Asset Management website.
So you'll be giving an overview like you just have, say, on DX Group.
That's the plan, yeah. I've only got 2 pages though, which is killing me because you know what I'm like once I start.
Brilliant. Well, we'll look forward to that. And thanks very much, and have a great time over the break, and a very successful 2021 to you.
Oh, and to you.
Oh, and as I've mentioned, we have this interview roundup series with our guests from 2020, and you can find them all on piworld.co.uk. Wishing you all a very happy and prosperous 2021.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.